March has arrived and are only weeks away from the big tournament. Yes, that tournament. Make sure to head to BetOnline and open an account today to get in on their $100,000 Bracket Madness contest starting March 15th. That's right, I said $100,000 and March 15th. You don't need to be hardcore to get in on the action, and with multiple entries available, it's the season's best chance to cash in. And remember, the NBA and XFL are still going strong, so whatever your passion is, BetOnline is the place to be for all your betting needs. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner BetOnline to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use the promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, for your 50% sign-up bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Fans, and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ, a Chicago Bulls podcast on the Blue Wire Sports Podcasting Network. We are brought to you today by Bet Online. Thank you to them for sponsoring the show, and thank you to you for joining us on the episode this week. And let's bring in the new regular co-host of Bulls HQ, Fred Pfeiffer. Frederick, how are you, sir?
Oh, I've been better, Mark. Today was a rough day, and my voice is not good, not due to illness, but due to yelling, as we had three straight basketball games. Playoff games. We lost two, won the last one, but ended a disappointing season overall, probably for my son, but and his team. I mean, my son had a good year, but the team did not. We finished with a whimper instead of a bang, put it mildly. A lot like my beloved Bulls, so you know.
I'm tipping your son's how old is he? What, like 12 or something?
He's 11 years old, and about 3 weeks ago, he hit three threes. In a quarter, he had 11 points in a quarter. That was pretty much the highlight of my life so far. I mean, the three-point shot means a lot to me. It's one of the most important things in my life. And to see my 11-year-old son hit three in a row in about a four-minute period, I just started openly weeping on the bench. And now I was actually the head coach for that game. I was the head coach. I'm the assistant for his travel team, and the head coach was out of town. And so I was as the head coach for that game when he hit the three threes in a row to give us like a, you know, 12-point lead. And just, you know, my feelings about my son, about the three-point shot, was just too much for me.
So am I fair in saying you were the Boylan to his Archidiakna?
God. How dare you? Jim Boylan.
I'm just saying Boylan started as an assistant coach, eventually made his way to head coach. His son is on the team in the Bulls in Archidiakono, who he's not a great shooter, but he's hit a few threes every now and then. And I'm just trying to find a similarity. Is that a fair parallel at all?
No, it's not remotely fair. I'm like, I'm actually hard on my son, and I demand greatness from him. Unlike Jim, who seems to bask in every, you know, minor achievement, you know, whether it's tying his shoes or diving on the floor. It's a joke.
You know, so well, I mean, look, this is a perfect segue into the Bulls. I mean, we should probably talk some Bulls. We'll close the show not talking about Bulls because we definitely don't want to be talking about our crappy Bulls for too long. But I guess the segue here, Fred, we can leap into the Bulls-Knicks game because they have just sort of finished playing. We got done watching some of that game because, to be fair, we didn't really want to put ourselves to too much of that. But to that point, Coach Boylan benching his son, Ryan Archidiakono. He was starting as small forward for the Bulls, but Shaq Harrison got the start against the Knicks. Not that it really made much of a difference because the Bulls continued their losing ways. I think 1-8 or 1-9 or something like that in February. Definitely not the same February as was the case in 2019. Just a deplorable February for the Bulls. Unfortunately, ends to another loss to the Knicks, which was not pleasing to see. So Shaq Harrison getting the star for Archidiakono, Fred, was that the right decision?
Of course it wasn't. It's a total joke. I come home and, you know, I'm in a bad mood after the two out of three losses. And I go, all right, I'm about ready to record a podcast, family. Why don't you go off and give me some time here to watch my beloved Bulls. And already I'm PO'd because he's starting Shaq Harrison. Shaq Harrison's a nice kid. He's 26 years old. He's going to be 27 next year. What the heck are we doing signing a guy who's probably really a G League talent? He'll be in the G League in the next 2 years. Shaq Harrison's not going to be anywhere near this team when it's actually decent. And he starts Shaq Harrison, who's his other, you know, favorite son on the time. Between him, Cornette, and Arch, they're, you know, the three, his trio of favorite, you know, sons that he likes to play catch with the football with. So I'm PO'd with that. First thing, Carter's back, right? What's the first play that they do? Let's throw it to him in the post like it's 1989. You know, back to the basket. So already after that one, I lined the remote off the at the couch. Next time down, and a couple other things really pee me. The first guy off the bench is his son. It's not Kobe White, who's got 30 points. The first rookie in NBA history to have 30 in a row for three straight games. He brings his son off the bench first. I mean, you can't write this stuff, Mark. This is like – it's just mind-blowing how moronic this guy is. And the team overall, too. Like, Thad Young's a vet, right? Thad Young in Q1. We tell our kids, our fifth graders, you do not fall for head fakes if the player still has the dribble. I mean, this is what we're telling fifth graders. And if they fall for a head fake and get off their feet and allow a blow-by because they get off their feet, they're out of the game. Thad Young falls for a head fake by Julian Randle. To his credit, Thad points to the bench. My bad. This is a vet. Like, you can't be doing that. Like, I don't – this team is just beyond frustrating to watch. It makes me sick. And this is really probably a low point for me, Mark. I'm going to admit, I have not really enjoyed a lot of games this season, watching them, especially lately. And there's a couple reasons why. But I go back to the first 3 years under Floyd when we won – you know, 13, 17, 15 games over the course of a season. This is as bad as it was then. I get sick, nauseous watching how bad this team is. And even the great Kobe White isn't enough to make me feel good about it.
Yeah, look, it was funny because before the game when I heard Wendell was coming back and maybe for you, Denzel came back in this game too, I thought, okay, maybe the Bulls might be slightly more watchable, but yeah, that wasn't really the case. I mean, you mentioned the first possession that Wendell had when he came back. They posted him up, a little lefty runner over Taj Gibson, which was definitely never going in. That was an annoying play to see. Wendell was decent in his return. Rusty, as you'd imagine, 6 points, 9 rebounds in 18 minutes, but still rusty. I did not like the shots he was getting / taking. You know, they weren't good shots that he was necessarily getting. Denzel had a nice little run there in the second quarter, which I thought you might like. But beyond that, I mean, this was a tough game to watch it. Zach and Kobe did their thing to a degree, but certainly not to the same level they were doing it in the prior couple games. But yeah, the Bulls are just a tough, tough watch now. They're 20-40 right now, Fred. 20 games under 500. I did not expect that to be the case as we're entering in March now. I mean, I always expected this February, March, April schedule, part of the schedule to be tough, but to be 20 games under 500 at this point, despite the East remaining terrible. I mean, the Nets and the Magic are just openly giving away the 7th and 8th spots in the Eastern Conference playoff chase at the moment, but those teams don't even want to make the playoffs, but the teams below them are so bad that they can't even get near it anyways. It's been really rough watching the bottom of this Eastern Conference this season.
And then we got 1,000 injuries too, but like, I keep on going back to this. Zach LaVine's our best player. He's been healthy for the last 10 games. You got to be better than 1-9 in your last 10 against some of the dirt competition they've played. These are not good teams they're playing. The Knicks are not a good team. Like, you should win tonight. And you have more talent than the Knicks. And, I mean, they the first quarter was a disgrace. And, you know, looking over the numbers too, Valentine plays 10 minutes, Ryan A plays 20. And I can't take this stuff anymore. It's just it's so stupid. It's beyond stupid. He starts Shaq Harrison. Like, really? Like, the first play of the game, I said, you're not helping the development. I tweeted this out. And I encourage people to go look at it. It was 2-2. Or it's not the first play of the game. In the first few minutes of the game, it's 2-2. Shaq Harrison standing at the three-point line, top of the key. They do a pick and roll with Wendell Carter Jr. And Alfred Payton's guarding Shaq Harrison. He just peels right off him, just ignores him like he's not even there, you know, like he would, you know, just any stranger on the street. And he just runs in and he breaks up a pick and roll for Wendell Carter Jr. You want to help Wendell Carter Jr.'s development? You don't help it by starting a 26-year-old Shaq Harrison who draws less attention than a scarecrow who draws flies. It's just, it's outrageous, man. It's just, it's so sick and nauseating. I don't even know what to say anymore. It's just so frustrating, Mark.
Yeah, I certainly hear. And I mean, the Bulls were just completely dominated on the glass. The Bulls had 33 total rebounds, whereas the Knicks had 33 defensive rebounds. The Bulls were out-rebounded by 17. They allowed 76 points in the paint, which is a season high for the Bulls, for Bulls opponents, which is obviously terrible. The Bulls, or the Knicks, snapped a six-game skid. And like I said, now the Bulls are 20 games under a 500. And the schedule, can I just read off the schedule or sum the schedule, Fred, to you in March? And I'll go from about March 14 or so. So the first game, March 14, they're at Miami. Then they got Boston the next night after. Then they play Miami again. They're at the Spurs. Then they play the Houston on the road as well. Then they've got Denver, Philadelphia. They face the Knicks again before going on a West Coast road trip against the Jazz, Nuggets, Suns, Clippers, and Lakers. So, I mean, that's the run that they have between sort of March 14 to, let's call it, April 8. It's a run of maybe 10 to 15 games where it's absolutely brutal. They might win one, maybe two games. So to your point before, where they've been playing some bunny teams the last few weeks, they needed to be better than 1-9, even with the injuries, because, I mean, they should have beat some of these teams regardless. But if we're thinking about the road ahead, there's not many more wins left on the season schedule. So to think how bad things have been just yet, it could get even worse, which is tough to hear and tough to talk about at this point, given how bad the rest of the season's been. But can I read you an interesting tweet that I saw that come across the timeline, Fred? I want to read this one to you, and I want to get your reaction to it. I have no idea who this is, but at @DavidScott19. Shout out to David if he's listening. He's probably not, but just in case he is, he sent this one to Waddle and Sylvie. He said, "The Knicks, 1. Gutted their roster to make room for free agents. 2. Landed no significant free agents. 3. Fired their coach for underperforming, even considering their lousy roster. 4. Fired their president and general manager. 5. Are only 2 games behind the Bulls." Is that dark or what, given that all that has happened with the Knicks and how bad and how much of a laughing stock they are, that they are only 2 games behind the Bulls?
Oh, come on. Let's not get too crazy here. I mean, listen, as bad as things are, we're not the Knicks. Like, I understand they're playing a little bit, but they haven't had nearly the injuries we had. And I kind of brought this up. I'd like to get your opinion on this on Twitter. I tweeted this out earlier. Would you be happy with the starting lineup of Coby White, LaVine, Otto Porter Jr., Lowry, and Wendell Carter Jr. on opening night in 2020, assuming a new GM is in place? I tweeted that out. Yes, I like that group. 57% said yes. No, I need a lineup change. 43%. Yeah, I kind of like that group. I still believe. I don't think they can make many moves, number one. And I like to see them run out with that lineup next year. What say you?
Yeah, it's interesting because I want to talk about Coby White starting more in depth. And I'm probably more thinking about Coby starting the rest of the season. But if we're talking about next season, I don't mind it. It's worth the experiment. I probably have zero faith in Otto Porter at this point, given what he's played 25 games for the Bulls at this point, 24 games, something like that. He's only played 9 this season. Who the hell knows if he even comes back this season? It's not looking great. I mean, maybe he plays a few games towards the back end, but I guess at that point, what would be the point? But is it weird to think that Otto Porter might be the weakest link in that group going forward, which is probably something I wouldn't have said this time last year, but he's probably the biggest what if to me in that lineup, considering the injuries that he's sort of had this season. But yeah, I mean, it would be an interesting lineup. It would be dependent on the bench as well, because that lineup doesn't have a lot of scope for a high ceiling there. So you would need to build a nice depth team to maybe, so, just in case injuries were to strike again. That way you maybe have to go 10 deep or bat 10 deep with that sort of starting lineup. That way, if you were to have a few injuries, you can sort of overcome it, unlike this season. But yeah, I mean, there's some scope for potential for that lineup, but based on how things have gone this year, I can't get too excited about it.
I don't know about that. Like, I still think that it's a little bit unclear where this group is going to be, but the last 3 games, 4 games, I don't see how can you not be excited by what Coby White has done? How can you not be excited by what Zach LaVine has done for much of this year? On the offensive end, that's going to be an exciting backcourt going forward. I disagree with you about Otto Porter Jr. We know what Otto Porter Jr. is, exactly what he is. He's an off-injured good 3 who's rarely available. But when he plays, he's good. He'll hit a lot of 3s for you. He's pretty good on both sides of the ball. But that's what he is. I don't know what Lauri Markkanen is anymore. I'm so confused by him in this season. I feel like I know him less than I should. And I think I know Wendell Carter is. I have a lot of confidence in Wendell Carter as a defensive just a great defensive player in for the next 10 years. So I'm not really worried about him. I'm not worried about Zach or Kobe. It's Laurie who I have more questions about. But, you know, big picture, I do want to say, and I think you kind of alluded to it a little bit, like, what's the purpose of playing Otto? I am very, very big on if that guy's available, he's got to play. Because by putting Shaq Harrison at the three or Ryan A or this other these other jokes who are G League level talent, I think you can do a lot more harm to the development of these core four players than help. In fact, I think you can seriously hinder their development. And I think by playing a player like Otto could significantly help their development, help them build confidence, you know, compete in these games, win, and really set the tone for a solid offseason, as opposed to keep on going down this route and just in tanking. Like, there's nobody worthwhile to tank for. It's not like Zion's out there. Like, so me, I think you got to play as well as possible and play for wins as opposed to just tanking for the rest of the season. What say you?
Look, I'm not thinking about tanking at this point, but it's funny you say that, Fred, because after this loss, now that the Bulls sit at 20-40, they happen to have the 7th worst record in the league. So maybe we need to update the mantra to something, I don't know, 7th seed or 7th pick in 17, 7th pick in 18, 7th pick in 19, possibly 7th pick in 20 as well. So that 7 number, Fred, it definitely haunts you, but not to the way that you would hope it would. But yeah, I understand what you're saying. I don't know if they should be tanking. They probably don't really need to tank because I just went off the schedule before. I ran that off before. They're probably organically going to lose a bunch of games here. So they don't necessarily have to tank it out to really end up with a bottom 5-7 record or something of that nature. So yeah, it's a weird one. I understand your point, but I don't even know what the hell is wrong with Otto at this point. I think they've been so cagey about this whole thing that I have no confidence that even if he was coming back and to be pushed back into the lineup that he would actually be okay. Because, I mean, Zach tweaked his quad before the Knicks game. Apparently, Kobe White tweaked his back before practice the other day, before the Knicks game. He apparently was okay, hence why he played in this game. But I have zero faith in the Bulls medical team at this point, to the point where if Otto was clear to come back, are we even sure he's healthy to come back and ready to play? I don't know. So I've got zero faith in that whole process.
Yeah, they got to be all fired. I mean, I'm sorry. I know it's probably not their fault. I know it, but at some point when you have 3 consecutive seasons of injury after injury after injury, somebody's got to take a fall for this, right? It can't be just, let's just run back the same medical group. Come on, this is a bizarre world we're living in here. There's got to be changes going forward, and there better be significant ones. And because this is not as bad as it was under Krause those first 3 years with the 15, 17, 13 wins, but it's pretty close. It's a poor man's version or rich man's version of that, where I can't recall ever being this disappointed in a team. And it's the same song. Everybody's hurt again. There's got to be massive changes. No doubt about it. I'm on board, brother.
You're on board. Well, can you say the words, Fred?
Not yet. I don't want to do that yet because I'm not. I find that just I don't like to just blindly run with the crowd. I think that's not cool. And I don't like I know you've been doing a great job, you know, handing out torches. Handing out, what do they say? The torches and the, what's the other term they use? They handing out torches,
running tiki out. Torches. What are you talking about?
You know what they say, like
pitchforks.
Pitchforks, yeah, that's it. They're handing out pitchforks. I know you're doing a great job with the mob, but you know, I think it's clear there's going to be changes. I'm not saying firing, but there's going to be changes, and there should be. And it's going to be someone else making decisions. We talked about that last week. If anybody wants to listen to that again, go run back. I don't want to play that game again. Play that tune.
Well, I kind of want to play that game again. I mean, you said you're on board. You said you're on board. And I mean, Paxson being demoted to some other position or going back into some other position, that's technically kind of like firing him, sort of. So just say the
words.
Why
don't we start talking about Kobe White? Should he be starting or not? Because I think this is a good topic we haven't touched on yet. Can we talk about that?
we can certainly talk about that, but let me leave you with this quote, Fred, from John Paxson. And this one came from in April 2019, talking after the Bulls season last season. He said, "I think our training methods are excellent if the players will buy into them. I'm confident in our training methods. I would like to see our players in this building adhering to that." Now, given how bad the run of injuries have been this season, I can only come away with two thoughts after that. One, either the Bulls medical staff and their methods and their training methods are terrible, which probably most likely, or the two, the Bulls players didn't adhere to their methods and their training methods. So one of two things, either way, it doesn't paint a pretty picture, but yeah, I just thought I'd leave on that note. What, any thoughts on that, Fred? Anyone before we can transition to...
I agree. Listen, we're both simpatico on this. There needs to be a new decision maker next year. I'm not going to say John Paxson, who's a legend, needs to be fired. In fact, I do value his opinion. Just let him go off to a different spot in the organization and bring in a new person to make decisions. If they want to bring me in, I think that'd be a nice way to start. The first thing I do on day one is I'd call Jim Boyle in my office, tell him to get out. He's fired. That's step one. And then I tell him, don't leave anything either. Just get out and I don't ever come back here again. And then I mail him all his stuff. The second thing I do, well, I'd call Jim back and say, hey, I forgot to tell you something. Then he'd come back in the office and I'd tell him you're fired again. In fact, I'd rehire him just to fire him again. So that's number two. I'd fire some announcers. Not Stacey King. I like Stacey. I don't know. I think I'd be very good at this job. I'd sign Denzel Valentine to a long-term deal. I'd start interviewing coaches, Tom Izzo maybe. I don't know. I think I'd be great.
Yeah, you'd be clearly terrible at that job. But all right, let's clearly move on to starting Coby White. So this has been a talking point over the last maybe 1 to 2 weeks amongst Bulls fans. And I understand why it is a talking point. There's not much going on. And coinciding with that, Coby White is going off. Like you mentioned before, he had three straight 30-plus point games. The Bulls as well were starting Ryan Achudiakono at small forward. So I understand why this was a conversation, but I have been adamant in my position that Coby White should not be starting. He should be coming off the bench. I think that is the right decision. I hate starting with Boylan. I hate saying that Jim Boylan made a right decision, but I happen to agree with him in this case. But it sounds like you disagree with me. It sounds like you most definitely disagree with Boylan on this specific topic. You think Coby White should be starting, as do most Bulls fans, I would say, but I am definitely not one of them. So let's talk about it, Fred. Should Coby White be starting?
Well, absolutely no. I agreed with you for the vast majority of the season. I didn't think Coby White played that well. When you have three back-to-back-to-back games, when you're down to nine guys on the roster, what the hell are we waiting for? This is bizarro world, Mark. What are you talking about? Like, hey, if Coby White is in the long-term picture for this team, and obviously he is, they wouldn't have picked him at seven if he wasn't. What are we waiting for? He needs to spend every minute that he has playing next to Zach LaVine, because that's going to be the backcourt, and learn how to play with Zach LaVine as soon as possible. This idea, like, that coming off the bench, I think it goes back to Ben Gordon and all the mantras. Well, Ben Gordon, it helped Ben Gordon when he was a rookie. Ben Gordon's best 2 years as a Bull were as a starter. He averaged 20-plus points for two teams. Both those teams made the playoffs, the 06-07 team and the 08-09 team. Those were the two best teams that he was on, and he started the vast majority of those games. People who say that Ben Gordon was a bench player are morons. He wasn't. He was good enough to start, but unfortunately he was penalized for playing so good as a rookie that they said, he's a sixth man. He's a sixth man, and he won the sixth man award. So it actually hurt him in his reputation. I see the same thing happening here with Coby White. If Coby White is everything that we believe he is, put him in the stinking starting lineup. I understood your point then. I agreed with you then. But at this point, what the heck are we doing and what are we waiting for? Why are we trying to play Ryan A. and Shaq Harrison? Come on, man. Let's move forward with Coby White in the starting lineup. What say you?
Well, my obvious counter to that is it doesn't really matter, because the way Boylan is manipulating his rotations, Coby White is sharing a lot of his court time at the moment with Zach LaVine. So that is one point. And the second point would be that Coby White is actually playing a lot of minutes. In that stretch of games, we had three games with 30 plus points. He was averaging 34 minutes a game. He was getting up 20 shots a game. His usage was over 30%. I mean, he was getting all the opportunities he needed. Very few rookies have been afforded the kind of opportunities that Coby White has been this season. I've had a problem with that more generally, to the point where Boylan has sort of let Coby go off the chain, and I haven't necessarily liked that. I would have liked to see him being reined in a little bit, to be honest with you. But over the last few weeks, or more specifically the last few games, Coby White has gotten the necessary opportunity to play minutes with Zach LaVine, to get up shots, to run the offense, to do all the things people are asking him to do. It doesn't really matter if he's starting or not. He's playing the crucial minutes. So I just don't get what the uproar is all about.
It absolutely matters. When you start, you're playing against the opposition's best players. And that's what he should be doing.
Same thing when you close.
What?
Same thing when you close.
Yeah, but then why would you not want him to start? This is bizarro world. Like, so what? Like, why? What is everybody afraid of? I'm having these arguments on Twitter. You're going to break his rhythm. There's nothing that breaks a rhythm more than coming off the bench. It's difficult to come off the bench. It's easier to start. When you have 15 to 20 minutes of real time of not between when you took your last shot in warmups to when you're coming in the game, that's difficult to do. That's why Kyle Korver had his worst 3-point percentage for the Chicago Bulls, because Tibbs sat him till the middle of the second quarter. Now, I'm not saying Boylan would be dumb enough to do that with Coby White, but Coby White should be starting. When you have when you're proved that you can score and you can play as good as you are, and you're playing behind two guys that belong in the G League, this is bizarro world. Now, if it was Denzel Valentine starting, I'd understand the argument a little bit more, but we're talking about Shaq Harrison and Ryan A. These guys won't even be on the team in 2 years.
I don't disagree that they're not going to be on the team in 2 to 3 years, but the point is that those guys they're playing the Keith Bogans role, where they're the nominal starters for defensive reasons, let's say, particularly Shaq Harrison, but they're not closing halves to the point where, like I said today, then against the Knicks and definitely the last few games, that Jim Boylan has been manipulating the rotations to ensure Coby White is playing the last sort of 6 minutes of each half. So he's playing his minutes with the starters and closing and learning in those valuable minutes. I didn't see the problem.
Let me start out with this question. What are you worried about? What is the problem here? Why do you not want him to start?
Well, think about if he was to start with Zach LaVine, and I still want these games to be competitive. You want these games to be competitive, I'm assuming. But if you're starting LaVine and White, then you're asking Boylan to stagger his rotation, something he hasn't done all season. And if he's not going to do that for Lowry and LaVine, then he's definitely not going to do it for Coby and LaVine. To that point where your second unit is Shaq Harrison, Ryan Arcidiacono, Daniel Gafford, Adam Makoka, and a few other bums here and there, your second unit is going to get absolutely tanked. And I know fans don't necessarily care about that. They don't necessarily care about the result at this point. But people that do is definitely the players. So if you're Zach LaVine and you're Coby White and you're playing good in that first unit, then all of a sudden you go to the bench, the second unit gets put into the game, and they get absolutely crunched. The players are not going to like that. So I prefer having the offensive balance at this point with LaVine and White going at it in the different units and then them coming together to close halves. That to me makes sense. That's why I agree with Boylan on this specific topic. Like I said, I hate doing so, but I think it makes sense.
Well, I agree with one of your statements that the players want to win. You know what doesn't help winning? When you're down 17-4 against Oklahoma City because you started a guy that doesn't belong in the NBA, and that's Ryan A. And you should have Coby White starting. You know what else what sucks? When you start out against the Knicks like you did tonight, because you have Shaq Harrison starting at the three. I agree with you. I want to win. Coby White is your best answer, is your best starter. And if that's your issue, then shorten the rotation. Don't play 10 guys. Play 6 guys. Play 7 guys. Not 6. Play 7 or 8 guys. And stop playing Shaq Harrison. Stop playing Ryan A. Or spot your minutes a little bit better. But, Mark, we were down 17-4 against Oklahoma City, right? You remember that?
I remember that.
Well, wouldn't Coby White probably would have helped maybe mitigate
possibly
those horrible starts? We've started
possibly
terrible with Ryan A shooting 28% and 25% from three in the games that he started.
Look, I understand that point, and I get that these guys are not good players and they shouldn't be starters. I'm not arguing that point. But I just prefer, I think the pros in this instance are more on the side of having Coby come off the bench than having him start the games, just from a more holistic standpoint. I don't necessarily think that should be the case going forward in terms of into next season and beyond. If you want to start Coby at point guard next season when Otto's back and healthy, or maybe if you've got a different small forward in place at that point, then that's a different conversation. But for right now, I just don't agree with it. And I don't see the uproar. I would be annoyed if Kobe was still playing 20, 22 minutes, something like that. And Shaq and Archie Diakono was still logging heavy minutes at that point. But given that Kobe is getting off 20 shots per game, is playing over 30 minutes a game, playing 34 minutes per game over the last three games, I just don't see it being really that big of an issue. I just don't.
All right, well, I'm going to disagree vociferously with this, and we'll just have to move on from it because, like I said, man, this season's a wasted time to me. And if we're just going to continue to bring him off the bench, because his future is as a starter, and I want to see him start as soon as possible so he can get used to learning that role. It's different. It's a different role than what he is right now. I want him starting against the best players on the team. And not only that, I think it helps him and LaVine. It helps their chemistry on the offensive end.
Well, I mean, we'll see. Their partnership in terms of two-man lineups have been absolutely destroyed this season. So, I mean, again, the results may not matter that much, but that is a fact as well. But let's move on. I guess that is a bit of a segue into the next topic I wanted to talk about, and that has to do with if there's anything, I guess, left that's good to be learned over the final 5 to 6 weeks over the season. Maybe Kobe starting is one of those answers, but is there anything else beyond that that we can learn over the next 5 to 6 weeks that I guess makes sense? Now, I mentioned the schedule before, how it's going to be tough coming up. That's obviously going to be problematic. Who knows when Lowry and Porter come back, if they come back at all. I'm assuming they will at some point during March, but are there any things that we should be watching as fans that we should be hoping to learn about the team over the next 5 to 6 weeks?
I want
to
see Wendell Carter and Zach LaVine in as much pick and roll as possible. I saw a little bit in the Q1 tonight. I don't know if that's going to continue. I like I said, I didn't get a chance to watch the final three quarters. But I want to see Wendell Carter Jr. doing pick and roll with him and Kobe as much as possible. That's number one. I think he's got a future as a pick and pop player. I think he's got a much better jump shot than he's shown us so far. We'll see how that goes. I want to see him continue to develop as a rim protector, shot blocker, fantastic defensive player. And I got to see Lowry come back. Like, this is the most frustrating part about this season is I kept on hearing, you know, well, if it was the playoffs, he would have been playing. Well, if that's true, why is he not back yet? This is over a month. Like, what kind of injury is this? Who breaks their pelvis? Like, to me, it's bizarre how this injury has just been reported, and it's a 4 to 6 week injury. He needs to come back. He needs to play, and those four guys got to play as much together as possible. So we kind of have an idea like what this is. If he's out for the rest of the year, I think it's a major, major disappointment because we don't know what Lauri Markkanen is. And I think you would agree too. Like, I think this year's caused more questions than answers.
Yeah, 100%. And look, if Lowry does come back and he happens to come back during that tough schedule that I mentioned before, then it's going to be even super, it's going to be so much harder for him to come back when he's trying to reintegrate himself into the lineup more generally. I mean, that's tough in itself, missing 4 to 6 weeks, 2 months it might be at that point. But then having to do that when you know you're not making the playoffs, playing against some absolutely good, great teams, I mean, that's going to be tough for Lowry to reassimilate himself back into the lineup, back into the league, and just get game fit again. So I want to see him back, but I don't have much faith that we're going to see, you know, a better version of Lowry this season. I think it's just going to be a bit of a write-off season, to the point where it's a wasted year for him, it's a wasted year for us as fans, definitely, most certainly the team. But I guess I want to see that. I just want to see them play as many minutes as they can together. I don't want this whole injury cloud to sort of loom over the team to the point where it's able to be used as a narrative towards the end of the season. I want to see this core four, if we want to call them that. Who knows if they are, but let's call them that for the moment. I want to see them log at least 200, 300 minutes together, hopefully, if possible, over the next sort of 5 to 6 weeks, because that's probably the only good thing that we can learn over the next coming weeks is how good are these guys individually, but how good can they be as a collective? I want to answer that question as much as we can.
Agreed. And I want it against good competition. I'd rather play them good. I'd rather have those four guys play together against good teams in the garbage, you know, Rucket of Hesperus type of teams in the bottom of the Eastern Conference. So I think this is a great opportunity, and he's got to get back. And then so we could see how they play together. And Otto's got to get back too, because I do feel like, again, you know, his being on that team, starting with that team, will help their development instead of hinder it. And playing guys like Shaq Harrison in out of position is just doesn't help, man. It doesn't help. It's frustrating when, you know, Shaq's guy peels off and doubles on another player. And screws up plays. It doesn't help with development at all.
Look, I certainly agree with that. And look, if Otto doesn't come back, you can be sure that he's opting into that deal, and he'll be back next season at that point. But that probably may not be a favorable outcome for the Bulls. So if he doesn't come back, you can be sure that he's opting into that $28.5 million he is owed next season. But Fred, I've had enough about talking about our Bulls. I mean, we've done a good 30, 35 minutes talking about our Bulls. We said this last week, but we can only talk so much Bulls on this podcast because they're just doing our head in at this point. But we've done what we've contractually needed to do at this point. We've talked about Bulls, but let's talk about something else just to free our minds a little bit and just to cheer up the mood a little bit. Maybe, I don't know, just get our head in the right space, have us thinking about something else that isn't our Chicago Bulls. So we want to run with this segment that we did last week. What did we talk about last week, Fred? That was Star Wars. It was Star Wars. Oh, that's yes, what we talked beautiful. About.
Yeah. Actually, I recorded a great Bullseye that should go up sometime this weekend or maybe Monday, Tuesday with Kevin Anderson, where he gave us his top 10 scenes. And I don't want to ruin but we were simpatico on a lot of things. And we both laughed at your anger at the Jedi.
We both found I was definitely right. Yoda is terrible, but we don't have to relitigate that because I was clearly right. I won that argument. But Fred, what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about the best albums from 1991. You floated this idea last week because you are actually a trivia quiz master. So you wanted to pose this question today. And I think that we needed to name this segment. And on the Bulls Discord channel, which you still have yet to join, Fred, I'm disappointed that you still have yet to do that. But one of our loyal listeners, Dan Foy, he mentioned that we should name this segment Bullshite. So that's what it's going to be called. It's going to be called Bullshite, where we talk about shite that doesn't relate to the Bulls. And that's what we're going to do now. We're going to talk about the best albums from 1991. So that's the kind of level of analysis, Fred, that you get in the Bulls HQ Discord channel. So you should join up, my friend.
Well, I was worried it was some kind of cult and that you guys would be trying to sell me Amway products or something. But,
you used that joke last week.
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
Well, it was good last week. It's good this week. We might have some new listeners who missed it.
And, right, maybe.
So I am definitely going to join. I just got to find some time. Actually, I'll do it tomorrow. I promise you. Tomorrow I will join the Discord, and I'm excited to see what awaits me in this universe of yours that you've built.
Oh, I can't wait for you to be part of it, Fred. But let's talk about best albums from 1991. I want to hear yours. I couldn't be more sure of anything that I'm going to disagree with your top five albums, but let's run through it. Let's keep it quick and sharp because I know I'm going to have some disagreements here.
Okay. So you want my top five?
I want your top five.
Okay. In order. So we'll go in order from five to one. Number five is, Blood Sugar Sex Magik, Red Hot Chili Peppers. One of my favorite albums.
I had that one.
You do?
I've got that one.
Where do you have it ranked? Do you want me to tell you what it's ranked or not?
You can tell me where it's ranked. I haven't ranked my top five. I just picked five because, to be honest with you, I didn't really think 91 is a big year for music. I know that's a contrarian opinion, but I personally didn't like 1991, so I didn't rank them. But I'm interested to hear where you had it ranked.
I can't believe how many bad takes you have that this you didn't think 91 was a great year. I'm just floored. Number four was this was very tough for me, but I'm going to go with Metallica. The Black Album is my number four, which I love. I thought it's a very, you know, I'm a huge Metallica fan. And I love, you know, Ride the Lightning, all the stuff before that. I loved One. One was my favorite songs of all time. I loved all that stuff was great. Master Puppets. But this was a very good album. I know people, some Metallica fans, well, they went pop. Shut up. It's a great album. Great song.
Nice. It's fine. It's a fine album, but it was tough to see them diverge that way. I mean, it's tough.
It's not tough. It was great. It is. The songs were so good. Unforgiven. Anybody who hasn't heard any of these songs, Unforgiven is one of my favorite Metallica songs. I highly recommend it. Showed a lot.
Pales in comparison to their first four albums.
Probably true. All right, let's just keep on going with my list. I'm getting angry. Number three is 10 by Pearl Jam. I loved that album. I got to walk with Eddie Vedder at Lollapalooza. Maybe it was in 90. It was the second Lollapalooza. I was a huge Jane's Addictions fan. I was at the first one. I also went to the second one. My buddy and I walked the entire World Music Theater with, you know, I was pretty young, with Eddie Vedder, and we spent the whole time there while probably we saw thousands of Pearl Jam fans walk right by us. They had no idea it was Eddie Vedder. It was one of the most amazing days of my life. And we talked.
You say walk, but do you mean stalk?
No, we walked. Shut up. We were. he was signing something, and I went up to him. I go, Eddie. She goes, oh, you're the last. I was signing something. They have these sections where people were signing, you know, whatever it was. I don't even know what it was. Could have been my soul somewhere. And then I signed it, and she's like, you're the last guy to sign it. And Eddie Vedder signed it. I go, really? She's like, yeah, he was just here. Like, what? And then she points over to her, oh, there he is. And I turned around. He had his hair in a hat, and he was super short. I was shocked how short he was. I'm 6 foot. He was probably, I guess, 5'6", 5'7". And I went up to him, and he signed my thing. And then he left, and my other friend who was with me missed him. So we started walking back through the World Music Theater, the where people sit and stuff. They're on the lawn. And he was sitting in the middle of about 10 girls. And then I'm like, there he is, you know. And then my friend's like, oh, I got to go talk to him. And then and so he gets up and he starts walking away. My friend runs up to him and he mumbled something. And he said, hey, Eddie, can I just talk to you? And he walked right by him and he mumbled something. And he kind of looked at me and he walked about 10 more feet. And he turns around and he goes, walk with me. And so it was me on the side. And in the middle was Eddie Vedder. And my friend was on the other side. And we talked Bulls, Cubs, Beatles for about half an hour. It was one of the greatest days ever, man. He was super cool. I actually invited him to my house to play basketball.
did he say yes?
He never showed up. He never showed up, but I gave him my address and everything. Because he was, while you're in Chicago, man, I'm really good. Let's go shoot. I love shooting threes. It was really good, really good talk.
I'm glad to hear. So that was thank you for sharing that story. I was hoping we'd have a story later on, but I appreciate that one just coming into the middle of it. But who else do you have on your list? That was number three.
So that was number Pearl three, Jam 10. And then number one and two is Guns N' Roses, Use Your Illusion. One is number two, and then Use Your Illusion 2 is number one. So right. People don't remember this, but back in that era, when an album came out, I actually went to the record store the night before it came out and waited. And then, you know, midnight it opened up and then I bought it and sprinted home and listened to it. That charm is gone now. People don't realize the excitement of that. And Guns N' Roses was so big and such a huge part of my life. I love that band. I listened to those two albums continually for about 4 months. And Don't Cry is a great song. There's a lot of great stuff on there. A lot of garbage, but a lot of great stuff too. Are you a Guns N' Roses fan?
Yeah, I mean, they're okay. They're okay.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, look,
okay. They're okay.
I obviously respect their work and understand their place in history. Like a lot of those albums you mentioned, they're not necessarily bands or albums that I would necessarily replay or listen to often, but I understand why they were important to many people, including yourself. But I wouldn't say I'm a massive fan, no.
Well, I'm sad. I can't wait to hear your list. What do you got on there? I'd talk, Laughing Stock, or Boys to Men. Is that what you're going to put on there? De La Soul?
Simply Red, no Boys Stars, to Men.
I bet. Can I give you my – I got three that barely missed the list.
Okay, honorable mentions.
Okay, Bad Motorfinger, Soundgarden. Love that album. All right.
Okay.
Do you like that one? What a singer.
Not really into that. I mean, he is. He's an amazing singer, but again, not really into that band.
Okay. Out of Time by R.E.M. Very underrated. Yeah. I did like R.E.M. at some point, and
nah.
I just got tired and a little nauseous with the self-righteousness, but everything else was pretty cool. And then what was the other one I had?
Do Not Say You Too. Do Not Say You Too.
Oh, yeah. Octone Baby. So I was not – the thing is, though, I was not into them at that point. I fell in love with U2 after 9/11. I saw a concert in October at the United Center. I wasn't even a U2 fan. Like my brother got me the ticket and he's like, come on, let's go see them. They're a big band. I was like, all right. Best live show I've ever seen. Amazing live band. And then I became a huge U2 fan. All That You Can't Leave Behind, fantastic album. Then I got into Octone Baby. I love One, you know, a lot of great stuff on that album. Ain't Nothing But the Real Thing, all that stuff. What's your list?
Nah.
Did you put it up somewhere? Can I see it?
Yeah, you can see it. It's on our agenda, and I most certainly do not have U2 on there. That is for certain. But look, I'm I don't like really the mainstream type of music. So I don't have Pearl Jam on there. I don't have Nirvana on there. I was surprised you didn't have Nevermind on there because that's generally people's number one album of 1991. But look, whilst I understand and appreciate their relevance to music and those sorts of things, it's not what I like to listen to. And for me, I typically like to listen to like punk or metal. That was definitely what I was more into when I was younger. These days, I'm probably more into electronic music. So 1991 wasn't a good year for metal music. Electronic music wasn't necessarily taking off in 1991. So it wasn't my year, I guess, is my point.
Wait, so let's go back to that time. Nine Inch Nails was pretty big then, right?
I don't know. Were they? But still, they're not my cup of tea. What about
Ministry? Were you a Ministry fan?
No, I'm not into that industrial sound. That's not my thing either. But look, like I mentioned, it wasn't a good year for metal to the point where it was like in the 80s. I mean, you mentioned the Black Album, but that was just a tough. If that's the best album in the metal category that year, then it's a tough year. So 80s was when metal was the best. So had you picked 87, 88, something like that, maybe 83, 85, that were better years, Fred. I wish I was kind of born in that era. But I had the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Blood Sugar Sex Magik on my list. I'm a big Chili's fan. That one made my list, which is kind of ironic, given I said I don't necessarily like mainstream music, but I do like the Chili's. But I had Sepultura, Arise. Have you heard of them, Fred?
Oh, Sepultura? Yeah, I've heard of them. I can't believe it's your top five. I mean, this is a joke. I'd rather have an Air Supply on this list than that. This is insane.
Well, following in that theme, the next one that I had on there is a melodic death band, melodic death metal band, I should say, and they're called Death, aptly enough, and they released an album in 1991 called Human, which was very, very, very good. So that made my top five as well. So I had Blood Sugar Sex Magik, Arise, I had Human, but then I went a different path to the point where I went mainstream, and I picked some legends here, Fred, and I picked a Prince album, maybe not his best album, but Diamonds and Pearls was released in 1991. And I like anything Prince does, so it makes my list. And finally, to round out my top five, again, not his best album, but considering I didn't really love, you know, U2 and Guns N' Roses and these types of bands, I'm picking Michael Jackson and I'm picking Dangerous. So that made my top five. My honorable mentions were Ozzy Osbourne, No More Tears, Stevie Ray Vaughan, The Sky Is Crying, and Mr. Bungle. So they're my albums. I'm sure you disagree.
Well, of course. I mean, I'm embarrassed with this list. I actually think Joyride by Roxette is actually better than two of the ones. What the heck is Death? I mean,
check it out.
I know what this is. This is like something when you were young. Everybody has those bands. I was into a band called Urban Dance Squad in, I think, 1989. They had a song called Deeper Shade of Soul. Oh, it was so good.
Some 80s synth pop band or something like that?
They were like a European rap band. I think they were from Holland. Deeper Shade of Soul. Everybody go to find that song. It was a great song. And, you know, nobody else liked them, but it was like I was in that stage where, hey, I loved it. I'm on to this. And that's probably you with Death and Human, because this sounds like a joke. Death? Really? Come on.
They're a great band. Pioneering metal band. I suggest you check them out before, you know, you slag them off too hard. But just check them out.
I will check them out. Michael Jackson, Dangerous. I mean, come on, Mark. This is an embarrassment. That's not even close to his best album. Off the Wall was much better. Thriller was
I certainly
better.
Didn't say it was his best album. I understand it was probably like, it might not even make his top five. But look, I'm not going to put freaking Achtung Baby in there. I'm like, get out. You too. Bono can get stuffed.
Let me give you another.
Bono is worse than Yoda.
That is not true. U2 has a lot of great songs, man. You got to go listen to Kite. Kite is one of the best songs of all time. And everybody who has not listened to it, go download it. For Van Halen, For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge, very underrated album off of that year. Lean Into It with Mr. Big. Oh, another good one. What else are we missing from that year I wrote down here? Skid Row, Slave to the Grind. See, you got to go a little bit earlier in the year also. A lot of good stuff.
Yeah, I wasn't a big Skid Row fan. I asked this question on Twitter, and a couple of people came back to me with a few rap albums as well that were pretty iconic that I know of, and I appreciate their stance in the music world in that era in 1991. But again, they just weren't my thing, not my style. But Yeah, I mean, that's the same with all the bands that you listed before. It's all subjective. It's just not my style, but I understand that they're big and they're relevant.
Cypress Hill was out that year. That was a great
album. Yeah, Cypress Hill.
Very good rap album. I really got into Snoop Dogg and The Chronic shortly thereafter. I think that came out like 92. Maybe I'm wrong on this. Gosh, I wish I would have prepared a little bit more. I just can't believe you came out with these songs. I'm like shocked. Oh, another one I had on my list. Lenny Kravitz, Mama Said. Great album. What do you mean?
No. Do you think people are happy that we're spending time talking about music clearly when we don't know anything about it?
I mean,
we know nothing about the Bulls, but we clearly know even less about music. Do you think the audience is riveted by this?
I'm a music historian. I know so much about music. And my opinions are always rock solid on this. So let me get to my story about music.
Before you do, Fred. Now, listeners of the show, look, obviously they know that Fred has been a long-time contributor to Bulls HQ, previously as a guest. And when he would come on as a guest, we would have him tell a story because Fred's stories are often funny, hilarious. They're embarrassing for him, but I'd take great pleasure in listening to them. To the point now, Fred, where you're a regular, I had a little bit of a jingle made up. So before you get into your stories, and we're going to try and launch into a story every other week or so, I want to run this jingle. So let's hit the tape.
Gather round, children. It's time for a story from our good friend, Sea Red Fred.
Ah, Fred, how good is that jingle? Do you like that one, mate?
Beautiful, man. You actually did a great job on it. I'm very impressed.
Well, we'll be running that every time you need a story. So before, just let me know when you want to hear a story, Bulls fans, and we'll throw in a story here for you. And Fred has plenty of them. But Fred, hit us up with your story for this week.
So we talked about the great Metallica album, the Black Album, and one of the great songs off of there, Never Sandman, was a huge influence in my life. One of the big songs that I loved, one of the first songs I learned to play really well in guitar, that kind of led to my incredible musician career as a, we went into that before. Let's not get into that. It didn't end well. But when I went to college several years later, we had I went to a Catholic, dorm, all guys dorm in University of Illinois. And met a lot of great guys there. And it was a girls, all girls dorm next to it. So it wasn't as bad as it sounds. And there was a coffee house that they had where they would play. It was like an open mic night that people would go to on Friday nights. And people would sing, you know, Kumbaya, My Lord, a lot of these religious songs. And we would go to it and get a good laugh. And then we decided, you know what, Fred plays guitar. And then a couple of good guys said, let's form a group, let's do a song. And we were the first coffee house we ever did. We did open mic. We did Used to Love Her by Guns N' Roses. You ever heard that song?
Maybe. The lyrics
aren't really great for a religious not suitable coffee house. And then we did Knocking on Heaven's Door, which was a little bit more appropriate. Right. And so we were a huge hit. People were going nuts. Like, it was great. They brought a little rock here. And so the next month, I'm like, all right, I'm going to take this up a notch. And I called my two buddies from Chicago to come down to U of I. Pat Kiner, who's one of the best guitar players in the world, still playing today, is just an incredible guitar player who plays anything Metallica can do perfectly. And their drummer, Tim, who was incredible. And they came down and we set up the whole gig. And, you know, like, oh my God, the last band that's going to go at this coffee house is actually going to play, you know, Electrified. And we opened up with Enter Sandman. And I swear to God, the place almost exploded. And I still remember, I think it was a priest or one of the religious officials in the back, like screaming, like, no, shut it down. Shut it down. Shut it down. As we did, ripped off in the Enter Sandman. In the whole place, man, it was one of the greatest scenes ever. We did that. We did, and we went right into Higher Ground by the Chili Peppers. And it was incredible. We did, and then we actually did two Chili Pepper songs. We did, what was the other one we did? Under the Bridge. What am I talking about? Under the Bridge. And then at the end, we did a Jane's Addiction song called Stop, which is one of my favorites of all time. You like Jane's Addiction?
Great. No, not really.
Great band. You got to get in that band. But by the time it was over, we had several people screaming at us, you'll never play the coffee house again.
Did you ever play the coffee house?
We actually did. It's a very sad story. Oh. So Tim, our drummer, as we were headed down to the gig, unbeknownst to us, he had like 10 shots before we went on. And as he jumped into the, as he jumped down the stairs, he actually hit his forehead on a ceiling and required 10 stitches. So while we were headed to the stage, he was a bloody mess. And people were screaming, horrified, as he walked into the coffee house. And he ended up having to go to hospital. So we played without a drummer, which did not sound very well when you're just, you know, doing, trying to do like rock, right?
Yeah, so you need your drummer. You definitely need your drummer.
We definitely need a drummer. So we actually tried off the cuff to do acoustic. And we said, we brought up my roommate, and I used to do I Am a Rock by Simon and Garfunkel. So we went from doing Metallica to Simon and Garfunkel, and I forgot the whole, basically how to play the whole song. It was a complete disaster. So, and ended up really, that's the end of our career at the coffee house. But overall, again, that night was magical as we performed Enter Sandman. Oh my God. I just still thinking about it now as he started playing it. And, it's just so great. Mark, if you were there, you'd have been so proud of me.
If those people were scared of you playing Enter Sandman, imagine how scared that would be if you were playing some melodic death metal like Death. Could you imagine that, Fred?
I can't imagine that. I can imagine people.
Or Sepultura Arise, something off that album. That would have been nice.
I got to tell you about our coffee house nights. I did get into a fight at one of those coffee house nights after we were over because the drummer got drunk and he said, "Yeah, Fred, what was he yelling at me? He was yelling at me, I'm going to kick his ass. He didn't let me play."
Maybe think about this story and revisit. Let's revisit it next week because I want the best version of this story. It kind of sounds like you're trying to remember it from, you know, 40, 50 years ago. But maybe I'll let you gather yourself and remember the actual events.
You got it. I'll bring back. But anybody,
fair enough. But look
for the listeners out there. If you really want to make some noise in the world, you really want to get a crowd going at a coffee house. Play Enter Sandman by Metallica.
Sage words to end a podcast on. I think that is a perfect place to leave this episode of Bulls HQ, one where we've rambled about music for the last 10 to last 20 minutes or so, because you know what? Our Bulls suck, so we need other things to talk about. So hopefully you enjoy listening to Fred and I talk music. We clearly know what we're talking about. But if you like that, if you enjoyed that, tune into next week of Bulls HQ, where we'll be talking more bullshit, more Bulls, a whole bunch of everything else. But Fred, I think that was... That was fun for me listening to your stories and obviously your terrible top five list, but I appreciate you joining me on this episode, my friend. Tell people where they can follow you online.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too, Mark. I got to tell you, hey, if anybody wants to ask me any questions about music, I'd love to end all these shows with more music questions. You can find me at CBE Fred, Chicago Bullseye Fred, at CBE Fred. And I'll tell the end. I just remembered why he was yelling at me. It was because he wanted to do a drum solo. He wanted to do the drum. Never mind. You can always email me questions at chicagobullseye@gmail.com. And then you also, Chicago Bullseye Podcast.
Perfect. You follow me online while you're at it, Bulls fans, at MK Hoops. Follow the show too, at Bulls HQ Pod. If you want to send me an email, bullshqpod@gmail.com. If you want to be part of the Discord channel, which Fred is joining on this weekend, hit me up on the email. We will send you a link and you can be part of it too, as Fred is going to be doing. So I appreciate everyone tuning into Fred and I just talking our babbling nonsense this week. It's been a lot of fun having Fred be part of the show as we try to make some sense of this stupid bull season by trying to focus on some different topics as well. So hopefully you're enjoying this and hopefully it's distracted you enough from our regular tough, tough programming that is the Chicago Bulls. But we'll be back same time next week. Thank you for tuning in. Speak then, Bulls fans.